Welcome, everyone. This is the Fanboy Factor. I'm Brian Isaacs. With me, as always, is JQ,
Hello.
Mike Sanchez,
Yo.
Cleo Kotop from Caster's Corner.
Are you doing?
And how's everyone doing out tonight?
Doing good.
Doing good. Doing good.
Fantastic.
So I've come to the conclusion that I'm the only one in the U.S. who has probably not seen Man of Steel yet, so
And yet you still run this
yes, I know.
podcast.
Joys of having a new child. I can't even find time to get away to go see it. But thoughts?
I'll go first. As the resident Batman fan of the podcast, I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. I went in there very open-minded, and even with all the spoiler talk and all the hype talk, I actually sat back and I was thoroughly impressed. I mean, like I said, thoroughly impressed, but I didn't love it, didn't hate it. I was in that middle ground. It didn't run. People say it ran too slow. I didn't think it ran slow at all. I think the balance of the flashbacks did very well. Henry Cavill, I tip my hat to him. He played a very good Clark, played a very good Kal-El. I mean, enough respect to, I know we're gonna go back to this, back and forth with this, but enough respect to the Christopher Reeves aspect where he just. If Chris Reeves were alive today, I think he would have tipped his hat as well and passed the torch and said it's in good hands. I do foresee Cavill as Superman. I mean, it's just he played that good of a role in my opinion. The other characters, Jor-El, as Russell Crowe, he's no Marlon Brando by any means, but the way he was used, the way they portrayed Jor-El was well done. Like I said, I could have watched the whole first movie been about Krypton and been okay with it because Russell Crowe was that good in the role. And circle back to Pa Kent as Kevin Costner. I gotta tell you, when he showed, and it was in the previews, it's not really a big spoiler here, but when he was in the cellar showing Clark the ship, and Clark says, "Can I still be your son?" And he says, "You'll always be my son." I gotta admit, I teared up a little bit because it was a very powerful line. I
Pansy.
knew I shut up. I knew it was coming, but it was well done that I could believe it. Just the whole the way they tweaked it was good. They tweaked it enough for it to be their own movie. You could tell where Nolan had his hands in kind of steering the ship a little bit. I could tell, at least from my vantage point. There was people in the theater who were with me who did not share the same experience as I did. Mike Grell, I watched the movie with Mike Grell, and he enjoyed it. I mean, he said it was very well done. It's a Superman for a new generation, and you got he said you gotta leave Christopher Reeve in his own era. That
It's kind of
era is
interesting.
done.
It's kind of interesting you mentioned somebody like Mike Grell because a lot of the story is based on Mark Waid's Superman Birthright, and he felt personally insulted about the way Superman was treated.
Yeah, I didn't read it. I read the little synopsis. I didn't read his whole article, but Mike Grell, he enjoyed it. He said, if the technology they did in this movie was not available, in Reeves and Donner's time, he said this was a Superman movie that everyone's been looking forward to. I mean, put it this way. I mean, like I said, I mean they f up Metropolis. I mean. I want to see how the timestamp's going to be for the sequel. I mean, like, if realistically, it's got to be like 30 years later to have a full-on Metropolis put back together again. I mean, that's just realistically speaking. I mean.
I think that is what's going to set up the sequel. And I think that's what's going to be the driving force behind making this much larger than just Superman. I think this is what's going to bring in Wayne. I think this is what's going to bring in all the other heroes. I think this is going to step up Lex. I think all that, the battle just Metropolis being decimated by that battle at the end, I think that's going to be where the rally point that brings everybody else together. So I think they did a good job overall too.
Well, but before we compare and contrast characters, go ahead, Khalil. Go ahead and you tell us what you think about it. Then we'll compare and contrast character aspects at that point.
I think it was a good, really good film. You can tell Nolan did it. It had a very Batman Begins vibe to it, between showing present day and then flashing back to moments in his life, just like Bruce did in Batman Begins. So it had that same overall character arc where you learn about the character through moments in his present life and seeing those flashbacks. I think everybody did a good job. I think, like you said, I think everybody had a good part. Everybody played their part and did a good job acting. And I think it's a good launching off point for the rest of the DC universe. I just hope that DC and Warner Brothers can use this and not, screw it up.
No, I feel the same way. I mean, I was very happy with the film. A lot of the points have already been made by you guys, but the acting was great. Each of the actors and actresses play their parts, perfectly, in my opinion. I do have to agree that the carnage that was caused throughout the whole movie will be the actual setup, for either the Justice League or the world's finest. I mean, I'm still not sold that they may do a Justice League film, but hopefully this will catapult to that aspect and to that way for DC to go ahead and finally give their fans what they've been waiting for now that the Avengers came out. But all I know, I was very happy with the film, and Cavill is going to be the new Superman. I mean, like we said, Christopher Reeve is the Superman that we all know, but I think he's going to be this generation's Superman from this point on.
What'd y'all feel about the supporting cast? They didn't have much screen time, but Christopher Maloney's character, I can't think of the it was Lieutenant something Swansnick or something like
No,
that.
Colonel Nathan Hardy was his character.
Okay, yeah, the Swansnick was the other general. Okay,
Yeah, it was the guy.
the Maloney's character, there's some rumors about that one. Some scuttlebutt around the net about him possibly being the Martian Manhunter. I don't know if. I think people just grasping for straws because they didn't get a spoiler of Justice League in the movie, and people just grasping at straws there. I mean, I don't really believe into that one, but it's a lot of people are talking about it. But
I think
go ahead.
you have a really good point. I mean, I think there's questions on who he could be or if he was really supposed to be someone else, like a hidden character. I don't know. There were, now that you bring it up, I didn't think about it when I saw the film, but you bring it up. And I think there were parts in the film where it didn't really make sense the way he was acting. Trying to go one-on-one with a Kryptonian and a Blade, there were two points where he did that. And my thought is, you've seen what happens. You've seen what they can do. You've seen them knock each other into buildings. Why would you think that you can take them down with a blade? So there's some, I'm sure that's what people are going to be grasping at. But I think the bigger point that I think more comic book fans are going to jump on is throughout at least the last half of the film, every time he's referred to, especially going into Metropolis, they call him Guardian. Now that's his call sign. Like Goose and Maverick from Top Gun. So that's his call sign being Guardian in the movie. But, having a character nicknamed the Guardian throughout a Superman movie just screams having the Metropolis Guardian pop up at some point. And even though he doesn't share the same name as the character from the books, he definitely could be a character they could resurrect and bring back for another film.
Right, I again agree. Here after the call sign thing makes sense, and I mean, it's just his it, going to agree Toto with a Kryptonian with a blade. I mean, yeah, it doesn't make sense, but yeah, but I can see what you're saying. What about your idea? How did Fishburne do as Perry White?
I think he was perfect. I mean, there are some characters that you can go colorblind for, and you really just have to leave it out. I mean, any character you can pretty much do that for, but whether or not the public is going to accept it, I think Perry White's a character that could be in anybody. And if you've got the I don't know how to say it, just the clout, the acting chops to do this very wise character that's kind of in charge of everybody, and pull it off convincingly without seeming like he's a blowhard. I think Lawrence Fishburne did a great job in that film.
And he has a great screen presence. I mean, Fishburne himself is just, I mean, he's a good actor in himself. So, I mean, just his demeanor alone, any character I've seen him play is amazing. And I know, Mike Grell joked around and said something about he was waiting for them to put the rings on and knocks people out like in 21, and we got a little laugh at the theater about that one.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's the same thing as having Morgan Freeman as Lucius or Michael Caine as Alfred. It's giving the character, you know, an older actor who's been around for a long time that's done some very serious parts, and giving that role to him, even though it's not the biggest part in the film, it adds a depth to the film that a newer actor, an unknown, wouldn't give to that role.
Now, we know there was controversy about in the previews when Lois Lane was in the interrogation chamber with him, and she said, well, the S in the chest and the whole dialogue went down, and we didn't think they were going to use the name Superman in the movie, but at the end they did. I think they used it twice.
I think they used it more than... They might have used it more than that, but I think where he actually got the name, I think was better than where he gets it in the comic. Just having Lois write an article about him, having the soldiers nickname him, codename Superman, I think what gave more depth to the name, gave a little more, I don't know, made the name a little more important to me.
I agree. Like I said. Now let's go to
Wait, let's do the other characters, because you weighed in on Jor-El and Jonathan. Okay. I think Jor-El did a great job. I think Russell Crowe did a great job as Jor-El. I think it made him a badass. I mean, that's the only way I can say it. He's not the scientist just, you know, trying to convince anybody. He went toe to toe with Zod and was able to, you know, go toe to toe with him and take him down at one point. And I think, you know, he showed off the rebel that Clark was never allowed to be on Earth. And I think that's funny because you always want to see Superman cut loose at some point, and you don't want to see him always hindered. And so to see him cut loose like his father was fun. And I think Kevin Costner did a great job as Jonathan, but just like is it John Snyder that did it in Smallville, at some point you start to really not like Jonathan. Like, I understand why, but there's a point where somebody like this needs to cut loose and be able to do what he can do. And watching Jonathan, you know, constantly shut him down, I understand it, and I can see why. But you do get to the point where you're frustrated. Just as, you know, you get to that point. I guess it's on the movie maker's part. They did such a good job making the audience part of that universe that you feel as frustrated as Clark. And I think that's a tribute to the writers and the director of being able to give that feeling to the audience, because I was just as frustrated as Clark watching that film, like saying, let him hit somebody, let him save the dog, let him all those things. And you understand why he's doing it, but it's still frustrating as hell.
Yeah. And you said the movie makers did a really good job. That one scene when, he was getting out of the car to go see his father at the shop, and the kids are pushing him down. Then when Pete helps him up, the fence is all decimated because Clark was grabbing the fence so hard.
Yeah, he bent it, and yeah, you could feel the frustration, and you could feel the pain too. And I don't want to spoil too much in this podcast. I mean, we are going to talk spoilers, and everybody's going to say, you know, but you know, we all know. Part of Clark's journey, part of him becoming Superman, is losing his parents in some way. So the way he lost Jonathan in this film was so much more powerful, I think, the Clark Kent character than the typical he has a heart attack in the middle of nowhere. It's a change to the mythology of Superman. It's appropriate for the setting, and it is so much more powerful and gives so much more to the character building of restraint, because I think that brings up a good point where you forget sometimes that every time Superman takes a step outside the door, he could break through the pavement. Every time he touches somebody, he could break their arm. rip their arm off their socket. So every second of every day, Clark Kent, Kal-El has to have restraint. And putting that part of that move, that scene, completely sums up and explains the whole restraint aspect of his personality.
Took the words out of my mouth, man. I totally agree.
Yeah. So I think the whole cast, it was a great putting together of a cast, and I couldn't see anybody else in the parts. And we haven't really talked about Zod, but I think Zod, you know, Michael Shannon did a great job as Zod, and Amy Adams did a great job as Lois. She showed that she is a badass. Like, she went toe-to-toe with some Kryptonians in the film, and, you know, there wasn't the whole romance of Lois and Clark as much as there had been in the past. It wasn't the focus of the movie, but I think they all played their parts.
You can see the passion, though, in her eyes. Once she puts the pieces together, she realizes why. And I think it was that one scene where she tracks into Smallville, and he says, you know, hey, I watched him die, and this is why I'm protecting, you know. And I think that's when she clicked. And when Jor-El says to her, I'm going to show you how to help him, that whole thing, I mean, just she did a really good job. This is not your typical Lois, but it's how I think if Lois was portrayed, there'd be a different – I actually prefer this version of Lois. I can't really find the right words how to describe it, but I prefer this Lois.
She wasn't the damsel in distress. She wasn't the one he had to save every time. She could take care of herself, and she could help at times. And I think that she did a good job. And I think that they doing away with taking apart a little bit the whole secret identity issue with him and Lois. Anybody that criticizes that, I think, you know, we can go back and say, well, I do believe Lois found out about Clark Kent in Superman with Reeves. So let's not criticize him too much until we see how their chapters play out.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree on that one. But going back to Michael Shannon, I mean, I know I've gone on some of the websites and said I do prefer Terrence Stamp. Like I said, Terrence Stamp's demeanor of a classical actor was in there, and just I don't know. I do like Michael Shannon's portrayal. I'm not saying he didn't do a good job. He did a really good job. I said I'm trying to spoil the whole movie for anybody, but it's like he did a good job. His end, I wish didn't happen the way it did, but I know why it had to happen.
Yeah, I agree. I think, again, it's one of those moments where you don't want things to happen, but they put you in the situation with the hero, and you see all the options, you look at all the angles, and you're right there with them going, you don't have a choice.
And I think that's where Nolan said he couldn't do that with bats, so he could do it with Superman.
Well, he did do it with bats. If you think about it, he didn't have the same choice. Not at all. He didn't have the same choice at the end of Batman Begins, but he did do the same thing.
No, I guess you're right. Yeah, I can go back and say, yeah, I'll retract my statement.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same situation. It's a little bit different. There's definitely a more up close and personal aspect to it, but it's the same situation he's put in. Do you allow things to continue, or do you find a way to stop it? And while it's not the ideal way, I don't think it's probably one of the first times in a movie, superhero movie, where I said, you did the right thing. It's the right thing to do. So
what about, there's no way to contain him.
No. And again, I don't want to give away too many spoilers, and people can infer what they want from those comments. But, you know, they definitely put you in the position where you agree with choices that were made to end the film. But not to, you know, go too much into the actors, but I was kind of amazed with how many little teasers were put throughout the movie. We didn't get the end credit teaser like we like in our Marvel films, but what did you guys catch? What were the things that you saw that were kind of the little hints that were there was more DC coming?
You caught the LexCorp on the tanker, the LexCorp on the building.
Yep.
Wayne Enterprises and the satellite.
Mm-hmm.
I also caught, and this is, you know, just me, because there was no when the space shuttle came in with Cal in the beginning, they were from Krypton, because Krypton had not had his demise when they sent him. So what I'm thinking is the Earth machine, or the world machine,
mm-hmm.
when they were changing the doing the little thing with the gravity, I think that's what made some kryptonite happen. So that's where we're going to see our kryptonite come in. That's just my speculation on how they're going to evolve kryptonite.
Yeah, no, that's actually something I didn't think about. There were a couple other little things too that I noticed. There was, if you look at the holograms that Jor-El was explaining Krypton to Cal with, if you notice the Kryptonian suits that they were using to look at other planets, it's looks a lot like Lex's battle suit. It's quick, but the Kryptonian suits that were used to terraform other planets and to explore new worlds, not the armor that Zod was wearing through the film, but the actual big space suits
with the lights on them.
Yep, those looked a lot like Lex's power suit. So the idea that LexCorp may be rebuilding Metropolis and the army may be sharing pieces of that technology with Lex kind of were exciting. I also noticed that at the beginning, a former Emil Hamilton from Smallville had a scene with the current Emil Hamilton, Richard Schiff. So yeah. I think that was a nice little piece there. And then the final thing I noticed that wasn't very obvious, it was something that you'd have to really pay attention to. At the end, when General Sonic was trying to track down Superman, he had somebody with him. He had a captain with him. And you had to see, it was quick. So you had to notice her name. So they're, you know, generals, Air Force, looking at things. And the name on the captain's, the female captain's jacket said Ferris. And if you look up her character name in the credits, her name is Carrie Ferris.
Uh-huh.
So I'm wondering if it's a lead-in to a connection with the Green Lantern, because she was perfectly fine with him as a hero. So I think it was a nice little touch there too.
Well, I caught a logo. I believe it's a part where Superman and Zod are going at each other. Like, I believe Superman is diving down and Zod's looking up. If you look in the backdrop, there was a neon sign for Blaze Comics.
Yeah, from Booster Gold, right?
Yeah.
That one's harder to catch when you're watching the film. It's much easier to catch in a trailer, or I'm sure when we get the Blu-ray later on this year. Yeah. I think that'll be easier to catch. So I think that was one that's been around for a little bit, but that was another thing that they were an Easter egg they hid in there. So there are plenty of things, I think, that were there for DC fans. I just hope that they lead into something later on.
One of the most interesting things is just the timing of the movie. Couldn't have came at a better time. We're talking about right now is the 75th anniversary of Superman. I mean, what a way to kick it off than a blockbuster movie like this.
Yeah, I think it was a blockbuster. I think it was. I don't think it's going to be as big as Batman, but I think it's going to be big enough that it's going to launch things forward, kind of like Batman's Begins did. So I don't know. I think it was a great way to kick off at 75th and start talking about some of that stuff. So what do you guys think? Who's been the Superman for you in the past 75 years?
Well, I mean, like I said, I like the old school. You know, are you talking comic book? Talking just in general.
Well, let's start with film. Who's the man who is Superman and always will be?
Christopher Reeve will always be the Man of Steel to me. I mean, I remember being a little kid, and I remember watching it with my father for the first time, and seeing it. It just, to me, it was amazing to see. And just Christopher Reeve in general, just the way he portrayed him. I mean, just being a normal. I mean, I think we hit on that one time where the sweat stains on the outfit.
Mm-hmm.
You can just say, that's your Superman. And Cavill, I'm not taking anything away from Cavill. He did a very good job, and I put him at a very, very, very close second, if not tied for first.
Right.
I mean, I kind of grew up, my first exposure had to be animated and then followed by the reruns of the old George Reeves. But these days, I mean, it's, I mean, call me spoiled, but I don't see any of the movie actors when I think of Superman. I personally think of, you know, the Bruce Timm, you know, the one where Tim Daly voiced it. That's my Superman in my mind. I don't know why, it just is. I mean, when I read the books, that's who I hear in my head.
Yeah, no, Tim Daly was great as Superman, actually. I think he would have been good live action at some point, too.
I mean, it's, but this entire 75th anniversary thing is just, I don't know, one way I find it a little hypocritical, because mm-hmm. of the entire, you know, saying, oh, this past 75 years never happened, and
yeah.
then to celebrate it, and.
Well, I mean, it's saying it's a 75th birthday is one way of saying it that would anger fans. I think you guys brought it up in a previous podcast where, saying it's his 75th anniversary of his first appearance is a much better way of saying it.
Right.
Because really, you know, you DC Comics aside, Superman has been around one way or the other for the past 75 years, whether it's the cartoons from the 80s, the, you know, Bruce Timm Universe Superman and the Justice League Superman, whether it's a movie character, however you followed him, he's been around for the last 75. So, you know, when you read, you hear Tim, you know, when I hear about him, I always think Christopher Reeve, but you know, the longer this new Superman's around, I don't know if it'll always be my go-to.
What really pisses me off about this entire 75 year thing is just that I think some DC decided to do a giveaway of Superman, mm-hmm. Of a comic. And for the love of God, why would they give out All-Star Superman?
Yeah,
it's the biggest piece of crap around. They should have gave out something that more tells Superman how he is. I personally would have went with Annual 11 when he goes up against Mogul. I mean, Mongol, it's a better story. How is anybody, first time reading it, going to understand anything that Grant Morrison reads? Because the guy is such a hack, it's not even funny.
Well, I mean, you know, Bruce Timm went on raving that it's his favorite story ever and that he loved doing it in animation form. And I think it fell flat completely when they did it. I didn't like it. But it's the same mentality that people say, you know, if you're going to read Batman, you have to read The Dark Knight, you know, The Dark Knight Returns, because it's the best Batman story out there. And I think it's personal preference. And DC is always going to push The Dark Knight Returns. It's actually my least favorite book. And I think they are all about, you know, Morrison's run on All-Star. And I think
they are all about a Morrison with everything. They're under the assumption that this guy's a good writer. He comes up with concepts, but he cannot put them into a story.
Well, I think it's going to be time that's going to really show off, you know, what's good and what's bad. I mean, at some point people are going to start saying, you know, this is crap and we can't. You know, this was crap. It's going to be Schumacher and Tim Burton's Batman all over again at some point.
I didn't like All-Star either, Batman or Superman. I mean, I read them both, and I could not get a taste for them either way. So I agree, Brian. I don't know why you have an opportunity to give away anything, but you pick that. It's just, to me, it was either they had extras lying around, they wanted to do something with it, or I don't know. It's just, it made no sense.
I think it was marketing. I mean, think about it. You have books based on it. You've got graphic novels based on it, and you've got an animated feature based on it. So they're trying to sell the book, and they're trying to sell their DVDs. So they're going to pick something that's been on DVD or on DVD, and is in a book and is in back issue. You know, they're looking for a way to make more money. So from a business standpoint, it's a little bit understandable why they would push something that they have an animated feature for. But from a fan standpoint, I agree. It's not the story that's going to get people interested.
It's the biggest.
Did anyone pick up Unchained at their comic shop this week?
No.
I thumbed through it, and I mean, again, it's pretty pictures, and I didn't read it, but I mean, it's just one of those things where, from what I've gathered, not a lot of people took into it. I don't know if it's because maybe it was just a bad weekend to drop a new book or what, but I mean, I know at the comic shop I work at, we ordered a crap ton of copies, and we still have a crap ton of copies sitting there. So I don't know if no one knew about it or if no one cares about it.
Well, I mean, this is a whole different discussion, but, you know, how many people can download it too? I mean,
yeah, it's also
true. I'm sorry, I completely spaced on whether or not that is, was that a giveaway or was it a book you had to buy?
No, it's a new series, Superman Unchained. Jim Lee's okay. Doing the art and Scott Snyder's doing the story.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how many people said, I'm not going to pick up a copy, I'll download it either legally or illegally. You know, why am I going to buy another Superman book if what's out there isn't great anyway?
That's a $20 question right there.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know,
I mean, it's shipped with five different variation covers.
That's and then too many.
Looking at the previews, issue 3 is going to ship with 10 covers. And I'm not understanding why all these covers are coming with this book, but I guess because Jim Lee's doing it, and I have no idea.
Hey, it's still better than Justice League. What was, you know, 54 variant covers, just a change of the flag. Still a lot better than that.
That's well, true. What is this, the 90s? Well, are we going to get a foil cover next?
Oh, you didn't hear? That's what Villain Month is. Villain Month.
Oh, God.
It's going to be 3D.
Oh, boy.
I'm not joking. I'm not making this up.
No, I completely, yeah, I believe you. I mean, it's all the character stunts, but it just reminds me of the 90s. Like, how many comic book stores do you have to run to get different versions and different copies? It's ridiculous.
It really is. It's just people didn't like it, and then now they're bringing it back. And it's just like, why?
Yeah, well, they're trying to make money. I mean, they've got to compete with themselves in a lot of ways, you know? They've got to compete with their online, and so they have to give people something to hunt down, and it doesn't always work. It doesn't always work. So, what else is going on for 75th? Anything else?
No, not that I know of.
No, it's just, you know, most of it is going to be happening in about a week at the National Licensing Show. But, you know, that's always interesting because, I mean, for the past couple of years with the licensing show, they're still marketing the pre-52 versions of the character. They're not marketing the new 52. So you got to wonder about how much faith Warner actually has. But, you know, most likely they're going to be trying to license the entire Man of Steel for the 75th.
Well, you don't want to market something that isn't as recognizable. And since comics change so much and reboots happen so often these days, I mean, why would you put all money into something, you know, why would you put all your money into an electric blue and red Superman? You know, I mean,
No, I understand the logic, but it's just like, then how much faith does the company actually have?
I think the faith that Warner Brothers versus DC, I think in general, I think DC changes so much, and I don't think that they can market current designs the way they can market big ones. Walmart and Target aren't going to pick up the little stuff. They're going to pick up the ones that everybody's going to see. I mean, how many times can they sell a Batman shirt? You know, 3 times a year they can sell 3 different Batman shirts as long as the logo is the same.
Yeah, I mean, it's safe to say that the even though they're not soliciting for it, I mean, the new 52 is basically here to stay. And I mean, I know at one point they said there is a abort button, but I think they're too far into it to hit that abort button at this point.
I don't think they're too far into it. I think they can always hit that abort button. I mean, look at the success of other things that are basically classic looks at things with new redesigns. I mean, what Sony's doing and what the video games are doing with Arkham City and Arkham Asylum have proven it. I who knows what's going to go on in the future with Arkham Origins. But, I mean, all those things kind of are marketing ploys. And I think when you do something classic and do a new spin on it, I think it can work, too.
Well, speaking – you brought up Arkham Origins. I mean, let's discuss it. I mean, there's a lot of scuttlebutt about this game too. And I mean, I'm looking forward to it. When I saw the first test footage for it, I'm going, man, you know, they've done it again. I mean, Arkham Asylum was amazing. Arkham City was amazing. And now we're going to kind of go backwards in time. Use the same landscape from City, but it's not going to be a condemned wasteland. It's going to be an actual functioning city in this new game. And they're taking a younger Batman, a more inexperienced Batman into this realm. And basically, it's going to be Black Mask introduction into the universe. And he's bringing in eight assassins to come get Batman.
It's actually his second appearance. He was in Arkham City.
Right. No, but the way the timeline works.
Right.
It's
gonna
be his introduction.
It's everybody's introduction, really. I mean, it's everybody's introduction to this universe. It's Batman's too. I mean, you're looking at I guess what they have titled, you know, a year two for Batman, where he's not the new hero that's learning how to use all his gadgets. He's got a year under his belt. You know, the crime lords are really pissed off about the whole thing. So now he's got to, survive a Christmas night in Arkham. So I think it definitely is a good way, jumping on point for a lot of fans. The problem is, it's not like with movies where you can go back and watch the first one. After you play this one, trying to go back and playing Arkham Asylum is going to be painful for a lot of people.
I agree, because you know they're bringing Bane is going to be in Origins, but when you played Asylum, that's the first time he technically saw Bane. And when you play Asylum, so there's going to be a lot of timeline hiccups I'm seeing already. But I don't think it's going to hurt the gameplay. I think it's still going to be a good event to watch unfold.
I'm more worried that there's a lot of changes, and I mean, we can sit here and list, like, I'll just list the changes and we can talk about how they kind of go in. First of all, Warner Brothers took away the game from Rocksteady. So that's one problem. Second problem is the usual suspects for the voice cast that we've seen in the animated series, from animated films, and from the first two games are conspicuously absent from this game. And the setting and characters are all new, so it gives them a chance to reboot everybody. But when you look at that as a whole, is this really a sequel that everybody's, or as a, you know, story-wise, a prequel that fans are going to be happy with? Or was this a rush job to get it out before the PS4 comes out?
I think you're right. I think it might have been a combination of a rush job, because Conroy is on record saying he is working on an Arkham title. But it's not this one.
No, and everybody assumed it. I mean, everybody ran stories. Oh, Conroy is going to be on an Arkham title, but it's not
this one.
Not this one, but it wasn't very clear.
And then you brought out the rush job for PS4. I mean, Warner Brothers went back into bed with PlayStation and Sony, because if you remember in Arkham Asylum, you had the only way you could play your Joker maps with Joker in gameplay was if you had a PS3.
Yeah.
Now they go back with the PS4 now, and there's going to be a Nightfall and a 70 skin pack, and then you'll be able to have a Nightfall play maps. So only with PlayStation. But everyone, if you pre-ordered it, you get to play as Deathstroke in challenge maps.
Yeah.
How many skin? I mean, I know for Arkham City, Batman had six skins for the Xbox. I think there was one skin that was only a PlayStation exclusive. Catwoman had three skins. Nightwing had only the variant skin for Nightwing was the animated skin. And then Robin had his Red Robin and his animated skin as well.
Yeah. But, I mean, but those are skins, all for the DLC.
Yeah.
They're fun. They're fun to play with. But I don't know. I'm not. And the other thing is, Paul Dini is not coming back to do the story. So no. I forgot about that. So you mix all these things together. I'm excited because the gameplay looks like an upgrade from Arkham City. But when you take away Conroy, Mark Hamill, you take away Dini not doing the storyline, and you take away Rocksteady, I'm not convinced it's going to be the hit that the other two games were.
And I'll stand by you with that one, Khalil, and agree that you know, Warner Brothers got their hands in the kitty now, and it's going to be tough not hearing Conroy. But, you know, there's been other movies where Conroy hasn't been Batman. You know, Bruce Greenwood did a very good job in Under the Red Hood and Young Justice. But, I mean, it's a, you know, seeing the first two games as Conroy, and now
well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that no one else can play Batman but Conroy. I mean, I'm sure Brian would agree with me. If you had a choice, of course, you always want Conroy to be your animated. And even Andrea Romano says you always want Conroy to be your first choice, but sometimes you have to stray from that. But when you're making a sequel, it would be like if they decided that, all right, Batman Begins is going to be Bale. Dark Knight is going to be Bale. The Dark Knight Rises, we're going to get somebody else. I mean, that's the kind of on the level that we're at with this game. Changing out Mark Hamill's Joker and Conroy's Batman and saying he's working on another Arkham title just says this is for the holiday season. We didn't want to rush a bigger game, and we're going to do a better one when you get your PS4. Makes me not as excited about Origins as I was for the other two games.
I mean, they're using the same landscape. Like I said, there's cleaning it up a little bit, making it Christmassy and putting people in there. I mean, in a sense, Warner Brothers didn't have much to do besides clean up the city and not make it a wasteland. And
well, just saying that, though, makes me say, all right, so you're basically saying this isn't really a sequel or a prequel. This is like – this could have been a DLC add-on to Arkham City. I mean, just – I want a bigger game. Asylum was an island. A city was a whole city. I want something a little bit bigger if you're going to go for a sequel of that size. You know, if you're going to keep expanding, don't just give me a cleaned up city. Give me a bigger playground to play in. Because, I mean, that's been the fun of it. There's so many different challenges and stuff. You can run around Gotham City, and you're not going to get that. It's going to be the same old thing.
Well, I mean, look at the specs, though. I mean, this is they said you're going to be using Bruce's detective skills a lot more in this game. So there's going to be, I believe I read, there's going to be a gauge where the difficulty of your missions are going to determine based on what you completed so far. And based on I can't even think of what the gauge is called, but they're putting some aspects into the game that were used in previous games that worked, and I mean, and the weapon they're bringing in that I'm actually excited for is the dual grappling hook weapon where you can tether to two different guys and they can bring them in together, and you can even use it to make a tightrope and get different places. This game is going to be into his detective mode and stealth more than the beat 'em up. I'm for that. I like that.
No, I don't disagree with that, but in the first game in Arkham Asylum, you had the triple. You try the triple shot where you can pull three guys together at once and pull them over or pull them together. So, I mean, that's not pulling two together isn't as impressive because you've already been able to do it. They took that ability away actually in Arkham City. And then, they have the tightrope thing. You have the tightrope option, that you can either use as a line that you can swing from. You can use it to sneak above. So, I mean, it doesn't seem like they're really pushing the boundaries. It seems more like it could have been a DLC. So until October, when it actually comes out, I'm very skeptical whether or not it's going to be as successful. It's not going to get the 9s and the 9.5s that Arkham City got. I don't think it can. I think with all the things missing, I don't think it can.
What about you, Sanchez? What do you think?
I played Arkham Asylum all the way through. Arkham City I'm still working on, but you know, I've been very happy with both the past two games. I mean, the reason why I'm excited about this next game is because of Deathstroke, because that's one of my favorite characters from the DC universe. So I'm, you know, really excited to see him in this game for the first time. And you know, I am a little bit skeptical because of all the changes that are being made. I think I'm gonna have to see a little bit more of the gameplay. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, they had No, they didn't. I hope they just go ahead and come out with some gameplay, you know, prior to the game being released. I know that's not a big thing all the time, but I just really got to see what we're gonna get, because I think, like Khalil said, that we need something bigger. I think for this to go ahead and be pulled off, and and be as exciting as the past two releases have been for Batman.
Hopkins?
Yes.
What say you, friend?
You know, actually, I played the original Arkham Asylum, but I haven't gotten into Arkham City, and I know very little about this one, other than it's supposed to go back to the beginning. I mean, it looks interesting and all, but if they're, like you guys said, if they're not using the same voice characters and stuff, it kind of defeats the purpose of the game. And I think, like you guys said, I think they're rushing it because they want to put out some games with the PlayStation 4, and what better title to pull in people to listen than, or for people to play than, you know, Batman.
Yeah, I think it's going to be for PlayStation 4. I don't think this is going to be the selling point. I mean, because this is going to be the last PS3 Batman game. I think they're going to be like, well, you know, you guys like the first two, you love the first two, you like the third one, but wait until you see what we do on PS4. And I think, you know, Conroy saying that he's working on the next version just makes everybody go, all right, I guess we'll play this.
So this actually isn't for PlayStation 4?
I mean, it's going to be for the PS3.
Oh, then I misunderstood.
It's PS3 and Xbox 360, but PlayStation has exclusive rights to certain maps.
Characters, yeah. Okay. Characters and maps.
But you know, that's with every game system nowadays. It's like, you know, if you play Xbox 360, you get this map. I mean, it's kind of redundant at this point. It really, I mean, it's a selling point, but in reality, I mean, do you really need that particular? I mean, you know, I understand Sanchez wants Deathstroke, but, you know, again, you know, we have both systems in the house, so it's kind of, it's redundant for us.
Well, I mean, I look at the cultural aspect of the game has done to both comics and the video games. I mean, Arkham Asylum had a spinoff comic, a 4 or 5 series comic. And then I look at Arkham City has had a comic going longer, and it's had a 4-book series during the game, and then it's spun off to a continual monthly series. That's on issue 15, came out this week. And it's a good story. I mean, it continues with the Arkham City gameplay. If you play the game, you can follow the comic. I mean, it flashes back through certain aspects of the gameplay and expands on some items as well. So if you haven't read it yet and you played the game, if you enjoyed the game and haven't read the comic, I would go pick the comic up. And then you have the Arkham City toys. The toys have taken off as well, both from DC Direct or DC Collectibles and Mattel. The Mattel ones are kind of knockoffish, in my opinion, but the sculpts to the DC Collectibles is amazing, to the point now where they're even re-releasing the Arkham Asylum toys. So now you also have that re-release. Then you have the solicitations for the Arkham Origin toys. And I look at when they first came out, they were $21, $22 at the comic shops, except for deluxe figures. You have the Arkham Titan Joker and the Killer Croc, if you ever found it, and the Mr. Freeze, all at higher price points. But now the individual Arkham Origin figures, it's Black Mask, Batman, Joker, and I can't think of the third one. I think I want to say it's Deathstroke.
I think that's what I think it was.
But they're at $25, $24.95 a piece. I mean, to get the 4 figures for Series 1, you're dropping $100 just on that one set of action figures.
Well, but, I mean,
you look at the success, though. I mean, the success of the toys, I think, it just made everything loop around. I mean, you have a comic book, you have toys, you have a video game. Rinse, wash, repeat. If they're making money on it, they're gonna keep doing it.
It's actually Bane that they're releasing.
That's right, Bane.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, I think that they all leap into different aspects. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if DC tried to do an animated film for it at some point and try to expand on the story. But DC's always trying to expand into everything they can. And I don't think the Mattel was that successful in personally, but I think that what they've done with the toys, like you said, in DC Collectibles has been great. They've expanded pretty much almost every character in the game. So I think, you know, expanding past comics, past, you know, I wonder if they would pass that into the animated realm. It would be interesting to see. Maybe they'll do something at Comic-Con with it.
I'm just happy they got rid of the moon boots. I kept thinking Napoleon Dynamite every time I saw Batman's boots.
They are kind of big, but so.
I mean, and the reason why I brought up what I brought up is because, you know, there are people who don't play the game. There are people who have no, you know, they know the game exists, but they don't play it. But I mean, that's where the comic book came through. If you read the comics, it stayed so true to the gameplay that you didn't have to play the game. You could have read the comic and still enjoyed what the game was offering. So, I mean, that's why I brought it up as well. If you don't play the game, you can still get what everyone's into by reading the comic.
So we've talked movies tonight. We've talked video games. What's left, guys?
Television.
What do you see? What's on TV now that's comic booky? What do we have that would fit into our genre nowadays?
We got Arrow.
We got Arrow. We're having the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this fall.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to that.
But there's so many other comic properties that would make great TV shows.
And like what? What's at the top of your list, Bri?
Top of my list? I would really love to see Heroes for Hire.
But aren't they I think they're going to do that in the S.H.I.E.L.D. thing. Because they cast Luke Cage. Luke Cage is in the commercial. So I think Heroes for Hire is going to be part of the S.H.I.E.L.D.
No, they haven't. Last I read, they said that wasn't Luke Cage.
And see, he's got the chain and the yellow pants, and I was under the assumption that he was going to be Luke.
No, from what I've been reading, it's supposed to be Rage.
Rage, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I really feel like, you know, you always got those buddy cop TV shows. Why not have, you know, Iron Fist and, you know, Cage? And with those two characters, you can also limit the budget very well.
And yeah, they were successful. I mean, they were one of the best parts of the Avengers animated show last year. So I think that they definitely could work. In a TV show, I definitely think that they have the. I could see a very A-team-ish team-up show for them.
Definitely.
What about Nightwing. The rest of
you guys? What was that?
Nightwing.
But could you? You're not going to hear any complaints. Nightwing is, you know, my favorite character. But how would you be able to pull that off without delving into Batman? Because you know how. Warner Brothers doesn't like to share their toys.
Well, so they were originally going to do a Robin show.
Yeah, but it wasn't going to be called Robin. It was going to be called Grayson. He was going to be about this a lot older. It was going to take place in you know, in the circus, him learning skills. What would have been better if they did it, you know, in between his transition from Robin to Nightwing, you know, have his parents dead. He goes back to the circus to find himself, and the entire series would be about that. That would work a lot better than just.
But I mean, the only problem with that is I'll point everybody back to Birds of Prey. Can you pull off a Batman show? I mean, as much as I'd like to say Nightwing's his own character, he's still under the Batman umbrella. Can you pull off a Batman show without Batman characters and villains? Yes. And have fans be happy.
I think it'd be very difficult. I mean, extremely
difficult.
Yeah.
That's why Birds of Prey failed. God, sorry.
I don't think it was the only reason why Birds of Prey.
No, but I mean, that was a big piece where it's like, how could you ignore everything else and put them together in a vacuum, you know?
But that's the thing. I mean, if you do something in between, he's already been fired by Superman. I mean, by Batman.
Yep.
He's trying to be his own person.
But Warner Brothers doesn't like to let their toys play.
No, I know that.
So it's like, fine, you can do a Nightwing show. I completely agree it should happen. you know, I'm on definitely on the line saying make it happen, but they're not going to let him do anything with Batman. They're not going to let him do anything with current Robins. They're not going to let him do anything with Superman. And as much as I love reading his book, the universe isn't rich enough, I think, to carry by itself.
I mean, you look at Smallville. I mean, I know it's a poor example, but look at it. I mean, you couldn't use Bruce, you couldn't use Diana. They were protected. But then the second it goes to comic book format, here's Batman in right. Smallville's universe.
Yeah, well, and I mean, they won't do that with the on-screen properties, and I think that's a big mistake on their part. I mean, if you look at – if you go back and watch Smallville, and every time Oliver is on screen, every time Justin Hardy's Oliver is on screen, switch out the name for Oliver as Bruce. There's no doubt in my mind that they wanted to use Bruce, and they said, screw you to Warner Brothers. We're going to write this as if it's Bruce for the rest of the series – but we're just going to call him Oliver because she'll let us use the Green Arrow.
That's a fact.
The conversations they had, the friendship that they had, the closeness that they had, it was all 100%. It was all Bruce Wayne. His romance with Lois, everything through that series was how Bruce would have reacted to him. And I want to say that Warner Brothers has a good track record. You know, Smallville was okay, but an Arrow I've heard great things about. I've seen episodes here and there. I've got to catch up on the whole thing. But DC doesn't strike me as the company that's going to let people get what they want from their TV show. So I think no, S.H.I.E.L.D.'s a good.
I was going to say, you know, my pick. I mean, I after watching up Supernatural, I think they could pull off a Constantine. If done, I mean, watching Supernatural the way it is, I mean, Constantine is a very doable show in regards to production and keeping costs down. I mean, if they play it to the chest like they are with Supernatural, you don't need that much effects. But I mean, you know, to say something like, you know, X-Men or, you know, there's so much to be done for some certain powers to be brought forth, but to dress someone up as a ghost or, you know, or so on and so forth, something in the mystical realm is easier to pull off, I think. So I think Constantine would be a pretty good TV show to watch, as long as not Keanu Reeves.
I think a better Supernatural character to go with, personally, would be Deadman. If you do it like the way Quantum Leap was.
Quantum Leap.
I was
going
to say, so you just want to bring back Quantum Leap, is what you're saying.
Yeah, but but I just love the character Boston Brand so much. You don't need the costume.
No, you don't.
Do you guys remember in Smallville the Justice Society they ran?
Oh, that was a joke.
Yeah, I think if they brought it back, not that particular one, but brought it into today's reality, I think that might actually do pretty well and use, you know, the new 52 style.
Yeah, but you run into the same problem, and I know you're going to get sick of hearing it, but it's the same thing. It's like, yes, I think that's the good thing, and I think the classic Justice Society could work. The problem is they wouldn't let you use Green Lantern, and you couldn't use the Flash.
But you could use, like, instead of, you know, still call it Justice Society, but use the Justice League of America characters rather than, you know, the normal.
Who would you have?
I would do, I would definitely do Baz. I would do Martian Manhunter. Who else? I can't remember who all's on that team.
Catwoman.
Catwoman, yeah.
Hawkman.
But she's in Batman's universe, so they probably wouldn't let you use Catwoman.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't be allowed to use her, so you'd have to substitute her with another female character. Stargirl.
Yeah.
You had to do that. I had to.
God, she should die.
Then we're going to add Blue Beetle. And then...
Shut up.
You mean Jaime, right? You want Jaime, right?
Shut up.
Brian got set up.
I think if you took that route, and even if you know, and the other thing is too, with the success of Superman and the rumors being started about Justice League, why not take some of the lesser known Justice League characters and turn them into TV shows? I mean, I know we've already had the Flash, back in the 80s, but what about Cyborg? Can anybody see Cyborg as a TV show rather than a big screen movie?
No,
but it's Warner Brothers.
The budget is too big. Yeah. I mean, you really got to, when it comes to Warner, you really got to think smaller. I think another property that would do great is, I'm not too sure if anybody else remembers it, but Sandman Mystery Theater. That was a gothic mystery show, mystery book. It would be great for TV, just set in the 40s like it was. I mean, yeah, it would, but they have other shows that are, set in different time periods, and it's the type of show that really would work.
Yeah, well, Brian, that could work too.
What about The Phantom Stranger?
I was going to say that one.
But how could you really do a series about The Phantom Stranger? It's just...
And how would you, how could, he's not, I mean, he may be popular with fans, but you got to look at the public perception of it too. Like, how are you going to pull in mass viewers, especially with everything else distracting nowadays? So you have to use a bigger name.
It's not just a bigger name, it's just like you got to look at a character.
You throw him a Constantine.
Yeah, but Phantom Stranger is more of a supporting than he is. I don't feel he could really pull off an entire show.
Swamp Thing,
been there, done that, and look what a train wreck it was.
All right, let me throw mine in that ring, too. I'm looking outside DC and Marvel because they're doing a lot of stuff with it. I was going more Invincible, getting the whole Smallville thing done right this time. So you have a comic that's not as widespread as the other ones, but it has all the aspects of Superman, Batman, the Justice League without having to use a big name. So you can use a bigger playground to use. And it has the whole teen drama in it. I think that could make it as a series too.
But unfortunately, that would open it up for a lot of criticism, because that's all anybody who's not familiar with the character would be. All they would do is just keep comparing it to Superman.
Wasn't that what anybody does anyway?
Yeah.
I think of it as the ultimate version of Superman and the Justice League whenever I read it, and I think it's one of my favorite books to read. Like, I'll get a graphic novel and just read it in a day or two. I mean, I think it's one of the better books out there in general. So I don't think there's a bad thing about that. I think comparing it to other things, that's fine. Saying, well, Warner Brothers won't give us the Superman we want, but they'll give us what we want here. So
I don't know. I just can't see a general audience just getting into it.
But if they like Superman and they like Batman and they like the Justice League, and you throw it on the CW and do the whole teen drama 90210 crap with it, I think it could work. I mean, look, Smallville worked for 10 years. Why couldn't this?
Yeah, because, I mean, I was always thinking, like, even though this would be in the same realm kind of, but for the Marvel side, I always thought, like, maybe doing something along the lines of the X-Men, but just at the X-Mansion, with all the new mutants coming in and them learning and going through their training and adapting. But the only thing is that certain characters wouldn't be able to be used that would, make everyone, make everyone want to go see that show, like Wolverine.
They did try that. They did try. It was supposed to be, it was a TV movie that was supposed to be a lead into a TV show that never got aired, Generation X.
Yeah, but they did a TV show about it, didn't they? They did a whole TV show about
it. Gen X lasted a year.
No. Yeah. There was never a TV series on Generation.
Yeah,
it was a one movie. It was just a TV movie that was supposed to be a launching point for a TV show that never got made. They never did one.
I mean, when it comes to TV, shows, like Brian said a couple times, the production budget is going to be the main thing. How much is it going to cost them to produce the show? I mean, you look at most of our favorite ones or front runners are going to be a high produced show. I mean, I think what's going to make S.H.I.E.L.D. Excel in this, well, the mouse has the budget for one, But for two, they're showing you the ages of S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean, it's not going to be your typical Freak of the Week type thing. I'm looking at more like an NCIS with S.H.I.E.L.D. agents.
Yeah, I think me and what Mike were thinking about were it's Mutant X when they did
Yeah.
So I think it lasted for a while, but it just never caught on with the public. So
TV's
hard.
I mean, look at Alphas, look at Heroes. I mean, shows that had potential, but piss poor writing and just it flopped.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then you got other things, look how well Arrow's doing, look how well Smallville did. Hell, look how well The Incredible Hulk did. How many seasons was that on for?
Yeah, but could that happen today?
Depends on how you did the show. Probably not, because people would be looking for bad guys, so they would have to do it like a Smallville where you had a new bad guy every week.
That's why some of the, smaller, not so much the lesser known heroes have a better shot. The second stringers, they really do.
Like Booster Gold and
some of those. I would kill for a Booster Gold show.
There is supposed to be one coming to Sci-Fi.
That would be great if they did.
Just him or with Blue Beetle.
Especially with Blue Beetle too, I heard.
And Stargirl.
Shut up.
No. I'm being dead set serious. I'm not even joking around. I heard that Jamie Reyes Blue Beetle was going to be like a team up with him in that Sci-Fi show.
I haven't heard about that, but they did shoot and ended up being one of the in DC Nation, one of the shorts. But that one was supposed to be a lead-in. It was a live-action Blue Beetle thing.
Yeah. Well, we saw that. They came out of Comic-Con a couple of years ago. 2 years ago? Was it last year? I think it was 2 years ago it came out of Comic-Con.
Yeah.
The Jaime Reyes thing. But a booster show, if they did it more Quantum Leap style like they did with his last book, I think that could be a really good show. Hopefully they'll let people, have Booster in the background and show a cape hair with an S on it or, a batarang there. And none of those hairs have to actually be in it, but they can be hinted at the whole time. I think that would really work.
But with Booster, don't you have to open up to the Legion?
No, I don't think you have to. I think you can mention it. I think it's the same thing as Superman or Batman. He could be going back and fixing things here and there and bump into things, but never actually show anything else. I mean, I think he could run all by himself and not do anything. If you look at the last independent series he had with the time jumping, going back and fixing things, kind of, it's Quantum Leap style is what it is.
Be interesting to see.
Yeah. See if they have a Comic-Con.
Yeah. Well, that pretty much wraps it up for this show. Some good topics tonight. A lot of great discussions. So, check us out online at, on Twitter account at Fanboy Factor. And also don't forget to follow Khalil on Twitter at Caster's Corner. That's Casters, KASTORSKORNER. So for Mike, Jay, Khalil, and Mike, this has been the Fanboy Factor. Night all.